Welcome to Anzac Letters Home, a project developed by Wendy Riley for O'Kane's Bay Museum. This podcast series features personal letters drawn from museum collections and letters printed in the Akaroa Mail from New Zealand Expeditionary Force soldiers, New Zealand nurses and their families, as read by members of the Christchurch Performing Arts community. Written to family and friends, the letters tell of their experiences during World War I. They write of everyday things like food, sightseeing and the doings of their friends, through to life under constant shellfire, attacks on the enemy and the deaths of their mates and fellow soldiers. For this reason, we need to add a warning. Some of the content can be harrowing to listen to.
New Zealand Expeditionary Force, 1914. The Peninsula Section. The following letter from a Peninsula Mounted Man is of interest. We struck camp on Tuesday morning at 6:30 and rode through to Littleton via Sumner, the South Canterbury Mounted Regiment going with us. The infantry came down on Wednesday at 2:30. We spent half an hour on the Sumner beach, gave our horses a sand bath and a walk in the sea, then came on to Littleton. We embarked practically straight away without any excitement or fuss of any sort. Our horses and ourselves were on board in a very short time and were all well settled down by the time night came. The CYC have good quarters for their horses. There are 90 men all packed in one big room. Goodness knows what it'll be like in hot weather. Anyhow, we all managed to sleep well on board the first night. On Wednesday, we were busy all day getting luggage on board and making things comfortable. No visitors were allowed on the wharf. People were waiting all day to get in to see us. There were about 700 people to see us off. They came on the wharf at 5 o'clock and we sailed at 5:15, so they did not have much time to say goodbye. It was a very stirring send-off, I could tell you. Mr. C. Hay and party from Pigeon Bay came with us out to the Heads. I suppose they were going back to the bay. I've been learning the signalling for a while now and I'm getting on well. I was on duty from 4 till 8 on Thursday morning. I went to bed early after having a good tea. I got up at 4 and took my post on the signalling deck. It was blowing a really strong northerly. We were just off Kaikoura and my word, it was rough. I was very ill for a bit but soon got over it. I came off duty at 8 o'clock but could not eat any breakfast. I went to bed and had a good sleep. We have 4 hours on and 4 off at signalling. We have no other duties, so have rather a good time. Of course, we go on duty at all hours, but it is intensely interesting work. When I woke up, we were in Wellington Harbour. A lot of the men were ill, I believe. Tom Warner and the Waghorn twins were the worst. We were not allowed to go on shore at all. We anchored out in the stream. I forgot to say that the trip up from Littleton took us 22 hours. We steamed slowly all the way and arrived at 2:30 on Thursday afternoon. We can get plenty of hot and cold water to bathe in, but practically no fresh. The 1st Canterbury Infantry Regiment is with us, so all Christchurch boys are together. They're all in excellent spirits today. We've all been supplied with dungarees and tennis shoes. It's much more comfortable than wearing the uniforms. So far the horses are doing well, but I expect they will fare badly in rough weather. The Peninsula boys are all together, you know, quite well. With the New Zealand Forces, 1915. Peninsula Trooper writes from Egypt as follows. Now that there is little doing here, the military authorities have been arranging trips for the soldiers who wanted to go. One trip was to Luxor and Khartoum, about 450 miles by train from here. It was a 3 days trip and a large number of troops took advantage of it. Another batch of men went on a 12 hours trip to Bakara and had a very good time. It has been very stale here for some time now, but these trips will make it more interesting for us. Our mail continues to arrive frequently, and I can tell you, mail day here is one of the brightest spots in our existence. I'm sure that if you could see the scramble there is for letters on mail days, you'd write at least twice a week to everyone you know. As far as getting mail goes, Tom Warner and Buster Liev, they seem to be the top dogs. They get piles of letters every time. They must be very popular with the girls back home. I have not seen S.M. Deitley for some time now. They're getting very busy in the SC now, and, you know, we'll have a little time to spare. I quite expected to see Jim McSwaddle, Little River, with the 3rd Reinforcements. I know he's been trying to get away since the first men volunteered. Did I tell you before that Mr. Dearsley is promoted to captain? I met him going into Cairo on Thursday last. He's looking very fit and well. Your papers arrive every mail, and the Peninsula boys all get them. We're well posted with Akaro and Peninsula news. We're getting the usual Easter holidays here, but everything's very quiet. Last Good Friday, I remember quite well. It was raining, and I had a very slippery motorbike ride over to Akaroa. Con Taylor rode over the same day, and he and I had a yarn about it the other day. Swarms of locusts have been going over our camp lately. They're very bad in Egypt this year. I believe they do a great deal of damage to crops. Caterpillar and pest is nothing compared with the locust pest here. Without seeing them, I could not have believed they were so numerous. For hours at a time here, the sky was quite black with them. I hear that new underclothing is to be issued to us soon. I hope they issue grooming gear too. Grooming brushes have been wanted for some time, and most of our chaps have had to resort to buying themselves. Some of the lieutenants have been buying brushes in quantity and letting the men have them at half price. Some of the men too have had to buy their own haversacks. I don't know whether we're supposed to buy gear or not, but I do know that if it goes on, it'll make a hole in our 2 shillings per day. At one time we used to buy our own saddle soap, you know, but on saddlery inspection day, the inspecting officer, who was one of the heads, said it was not right that we should buy anything. He said it showed the right spirit in the men, but it was not to be allowed to go on. Since then, we've had any amount of cleaning oils, etc., free of charge. It is quite on the cards that we'll leave here any moment now, but I guess you'll know pretty soon if we do depart. May 1915. The following letter from Peninsula Volunteer gives a good idea of the life our boys are leading in the trenches at the Dardanelles. Firing line, 9:30 a.m, Sunday, 30th of May, 1915. Writing paper is still very scarce, so I'm making use of any bits of paper. I'll have to dig up an envelope somewhere before I can post this. Censorship is strictly carried out, so some of my scrawl may be cut out. I wrote you a few days ago, and I hope you received the note safely. It's a beautiful morning now, and excepting for rifle fire and occasional shell explosion, everything's perfectly quiet. From my present position, which is about 600 feet up, we have a grand view of the ocean and all that is going on there. The beach is only about a quarter of a mile from where I'm sitting. I'm going down for a swim after dinner. Before we got moved up here, we were camped right on the shore, and we all had very good dugout bivouacs. Good food and as many swims as one liked made everything rather nice, although we're always in danger from shrapnel and rifle fire. Several chaps were hit with spathing, but it all goes on just the same. We're also used to shells bursting now that we don't get up to look where they're bursting. Narrow escapes of daily occurrence. Some of the boys have been wonderfully lucky getting off unhurt. 2 shells have burst within 200 yards of where I'm sitting, and close to where a church service is being held. The church service is still going on, and I really must finish this letter while I have the time, so to hell with the shells. We've been very fortunate in regard to weather, as we've had only one heavy downpour since arriving here. I was in the trenches at the time, and it was far from pleasant. In places, the men were standing up to their knees in slush. The narrow clay trenches were smothered with mud. However, during the day, it cleared up, and we dried our clothes and scraped some of the mud off. All our boys took it as an experience, which comes sooner or later, and none were downhearted. I cannot give you an account of our trenches or trench work, but you can take it for granted that as long as the weather's good, we have a very good time. The climate here is perfect. The rainfall very small, so we're not likely to suffer much discomfort. The CYC have had nearly all trench and outpost work, but are in for a week spell now. That's why we moved from the beach up here. We had to make room for our relief down there, and besides, it's much safer here. Our week spell is not what you would imagine it to be. We'll have to do all kinds of fatigues, make roads and dugouts, and although we won't be in the firing line, we have to stand to arms nearly every morning and evening. Having a spell here is like knocking off work to carry bricks. Our hard training in Egypt stands us in good stead now, and if the food supply keeps as good as it is now, we'll stand up to any kind of hard work for any length of time. Shells are still bursting about 200 yards away on the ridge opposite, but are not doing an atom of harm. Church parade is over, and our boys are having an argument about the shells, how they're made, how they burst, where they're fired from, and wishes, not the best, to the Turks who are sending them along here. If the boys had anything else to do, they would not take any notice of the bursting shells, but they have a spell till lunchtime and are just putting in time. Really, without any exaggeration, all of us are quite indifferent to either shell or rifle fire. I'm afraid some of the boys are very careless at times. If a shell bursts anywhere handy, there's usually a race to the spot to hunt for pieces. We've all got souvenirs, but we think they're not worth the trouble of carrying about. One souvenir I've got is a Turkish bullet which went very near to accounting for Sergeant O. Waghorn and me. We're all talking whilst on duty in the trench and our heads are very close together. The bullet passed between us and would have only been a short way from our heads, lodged in a clay bank within a foot of the back of us. We afterwards dug it out. Both of us got a scare and ducked instantly, but we laughed over it afterwards. Another souvenir is a piece of lyddite shell. I was out with a party and our own battleship landed four shells on top of our trenches by mistake. The four shells were all very close, but this particular piece made a much closer visit. No one was hurt, but all got a severe shock. Two men were blown down the hill but escaped with bruises. The noise of the shells exploding was terrific. It made one feel dazed for a time. One man was sitting on his coat outside the trench and had just got up and was going to the trench again when a shell burst and blew his coat high into the air. It came down in pieces. He was one of the unfortunates who was blown down the hill, but he congratulated himself with getting off with a bruise or two and a much shattered coat. One hears of these miraculous escapes every day, but they're interesting only to those concerned. I don't know whether I told you in my last letter or not, but a few days ago, we had a fine view of one of our battleships being struck by an enemy submarine. She sank in 20 minutes. Well, practically all the men were saved, a lot of other vessels being close. The greatest sight, though, was the other battleships rushing up at full speed to the rescue. I hear they accounted for the submarine. Names of places, ships, men arriving and being sent away, or casualties, they can't be mentioned when riding home, so I can't give you the name of the ship which went down. I dare say you know all about it before this. Our greatest and most exciting experience was a few nights ago. Our squadron was detailed to take some new trenches which the Turks had occupied. We started out just after 8 o'clock in the evening, another squadron coming behind to act as supports. The country near the Turks was new to us and was tricky, but by crawling and doing a bit of ducking and diving and short rushes, we soon were close enough to do business. We were under fire more or less the whole time, but you can bet your boots we took as much cover as possible, came out with remarkably few casualties. When we got within 100 yards of the trenches, the order came down, be ready to charge. And soon afterwards we did charge, and being our first, you can guess it was a pretty mad one. Every man yelled and raced forward like blazes, but unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, the Turks' imshi cleared out before we got to them, and we cheated of our little bit of meat spearing. As we got up to the trenches, we on the left were told to lie down and protect the flank. We opened a hot fire on the retreating Turks, but found it unnecessary to keep going long. Our other men raced right on over the trenches and some distance past and then took up a protective position. In the meantime, our supports came up, occupied the Turks' trenches, which we held the place they dug themselves in, improved the trenches a lot. Afterwards, our squadron came back to camp, and the supporting squadron remained to hold the position we captured. We arrived back in camp about 4 a.m. in the morning, very tired, but pleased with our first real attack. Our casualties altogether totaled 4, so we didn't do so badly. My personal feelings during the whole time would be hard to describe, much more to write them. One thing I was conscious of, and I find most of the others were the same, was that I was greatly relieved when the order came to charge. It was a heavy strain getting within striking distance of those trenches, but during the charge all seemed different, much easier for us. Personally, I did not see a Bali Turk, so could not do as he once suggested to me, vis-a-vis give the bayonet a twist before pulling it out. Hope to. No doubt we'll get the chance to do so in the near future. Time permitting, we'll give a twist for you too. I fired over 60 rounds of ammunition together, so I think I must have made at least one hit. Since then, those trenches have been heavily attacked by the enemy, but I believe our chaps inflicted heavy losses on the beggars. Our casualties were heavier than when we attacked, but nothing serious. Some very brave and plucky individual actions are reported, and we're here looking forward to hearing more about the affair. Although we're in the middle of the fighting, news of doings close at hand is very scarce. Things may happen within a mile of us, and we can only get a very small idea of what has been done. You at home will get far more news than we hear. A paper, Cape Hellas Times, has been established here, and we get a little news from it. However, we only get a little local news. What we'd like to get is news of what's going on in other parts. I've had a taste of capping too. Hard and sometimes dangerous work. Hand-thrown grenades and bombs, airships and balloons and heaps of other things used in modern warfare were all novelties to us. We're used to all of it now. Bathing in the sea is still as popular as ever, and the men flock down here all day long. A great number of them are as brown as berries, and all are in good health. We've had two mails since arriving here. Our latest letters were written on April 14th, so you can see our New Zealand mail is not delayed much. With the last mail, Sergeant Major Quarterly received a big parcel of socks from Mrs. Lang of Akaroa. Sergeant Major asked some of us to go along and see the parcel opened, and each pair of socks was a packet of cigarettes. Now, I must say that this thoughtful present was much appreciated by us all. Each Peninsula man received a pair of socks and a pack of cigarettes. Socks and smokes are most appreciated by us all here. And our very best wishes and thanks are due to Mrs. Lang for her kindness and thoughtfulness in putting in the cigarettes. All Peninsula boys are well and good at fighting form. Sergeant Waghorn has grown a goatee. Looks a great trick. Shaves are few and far between here, so whiskers are to be seen everywhere. Washing clothes is done with salt water. A wash very often takes the place of a big washing day once a week. We're all expert in the art of cooking now. Hard biscuits takes the place of bread. Woolly beef can be had in unlimited quantities, and we get fresh beef two or three times a week. Jam, tea, sugar, bacon, ham, potatoes, onions, and dried veggies can all be obtained. The Makanochi ration is the best we get here. It's a preserved stew. It's very nice when heated up. Ham and bacon is very nice, but is apt to make one so very thirsty. No Metropoles or Bruces here, so thirst is not at all desirable. Each section of four men draws its own rations and cooks together. Wonderful how we knock these hard biscuits into edible form. They're excellent soaked in water and then fried crisp in bacon fat. A little cheese fried on top of them. Yeah, very good cheese straws. Soaked overnight, they make good porridge for the morning. Made into a paste with a layer underneath, then jam, and another layer of paste on top, and then baked. You've got good pastry. Boiled with sugar and jam after soaking and mashing and wrapping up in a piece of handkerchief, flag or lining of an old coat. It makes very good boiled pudding. Good old biscuits can be knocked into lots of other ways for cooking and eating, and every day some new way of cooking it's discovered, and then great is the joy of the soldiers. The man who discovered the cheese straws is a hero and the idol of the CMO. Without any offence, might I suggest that ladies in your town take a few hints from the above recipes? No royalties are to be charged, but if anyone cares to do so, they may send along, cash or kind, anything will go to compensate the heroes who conferred a lasting benefit on mankind by discovering these dishes. Notwithstanding these very fine dishes, I would not mind an Akaroa flounder at the present moment. Draw attention to these little affairs. One thing I forgot to mention, and that is we get rum served out several times a week, and cigarettes and tobacco fairly often. On active service, one smokes a lot though, and smokes go very quickly. Just before our boat left Alexandria, Captain Dearsley came on board and said goodbye to us all. It was very well, and seemed to be enjoying life. Time is up, so I must stop, but we'll write more when I get the opportunity. I'd like to write to you all about what goes on here. Hundreds of interesting things which will interest you, but censorship will not allow me to write them. I hope these few lines may at least give you some idea of how we're getting on. Certainly is hell here at times, but we can all stand up to it and hope to give a very good account of ourselves before we get home again. I managed to get half a block of writing paper for four packets of cigarettes, so have a little to go on with. Make it last by writing on both sides.
The Anzac Letters Home podcast series was created with help from the Christchurch Performing Arts Community, the Akaroa Mail, Akaroa Museum and O'Kane's Bay Museum. The letters written by anonymous soldiers which feature in this episode were read by Bernard Shapiro. This project is dedicated to the memory of the Banks Peninsula men and women who served in World War I and in some cases made the ultimate sacrifice. To tell their stories of war and learn from these first-hand experiences so we may never forget.